It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and this is MPBN. Tonight on Maine Things Considered, the latest in the battle over Governor Paula Page's vetoes of 65 bills, arguments today in the Maine Supreme Judicial Court, and a former shoe mill in Auburn could become an upscale medical tourism facility for wealthy Chinese. Those stories in a moment. First, this news. This is Maine Things Considered on Maine Public Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. The Maine Supreme Judicial Court will likely resolve the question of whether Governor Paula Page waited too long to veto bills sent to him by the legislature on June 30th. The court heard arguments from four different legal teams today in Portland. Chief Justice Lee Sofley says the court can only issue an advisory opinion in the case, but interested parties say it's unlikely either the governor or the legislature would challenge that opinion. So, as A.J. Higgins reports, the fate of 65 bills hangs on the High Court's ruling.
To understand the legal position that Governor Paula Page saw himself in on June 30th, his attorney, Cynthia Montgomery, says it's important to look at the adjournment order that the legislature's presiding officers signed, a document that essentially said the lawmakers were adjourned until they were summoned back. Montgomery said as far as LaPage was concerned, that might not have been until January.
When the legislature adjourned on the 30th without a date certain to return, that is what triggered the difficulty here. So typically, if the legislature chooses to adjourn for longer than 10 days, but gives a date certain for return, that is a different scenario than the one we faced this time.
Adjournment dates trigger a deadline for the governor to veto bills, and in this case, there are 65 of those. Legislative leaders maintain that their adjournment order was no different than others issued in the past. And they say that because of LePage's inaction, those bills have now become law. It's a position disputed by the governor, who maintains that he couldn't return bills if he wanted to because lawmakers weren't there physically to receive them. Montgomery refers to language in the Constitution that says that if the legislature's adjournment prevents the governor from returning bills, they do not become law. The problem with that argument, according to legislative leaders, is that the word adjournment implies final adjournment, and they insist they never adjourned finally on June 30th. Montgomery found herself defending that point during questioning from several justices, including Justice Ellen Gorman.
Ms. Montgomery, you cannot be making the argument that the governor was unaware that the legislature was taking a position that time was running. There were messages to the governor's office from both houses saying, we are open for business, return your vetoes if you're going to veto. So you cannot be saying that there was a miscommunication or an error. This was a decision by the governor to challenge his reading of the Constitution against other parties' reading of the Constitution.
It was a decision by the governor to follow his own reading of the Constitution. That's correct.
Montgomery told the justices that it was true that similar adjournment situations had taken place in the past with other legislatures, and she acknowledged the governor did not press his veto timetables on those occasions. But she also said that the state of communications between the governor and legislative leaders was particularly difficult this year, and she said tensions contributed to a lack of communication between the two branches of government. That point was soundly rejected by Timothy Woodcock, an attorney representing Democratic House Speaker Mark Eaves and GOP Senate President Michael Thibodeau.
It is crystal clear that this order of June 30 was deliberately structured for the purpose of allowing the governor to return the vetoes. I mean, it's clear as crystal, there can be no doubt about it. And I just want to make this point, if I may, before I depart here. It cannot be that the rule that applies, that differentiates this from other sessions, is that there was contentiousness. Tension is built into the separation of powers. It's a shared power. That can't be the constitutional rule.
I think the governor still has an uphill battle on this, but I don't think he's starting at the base of the mountain anymore.
That's Michael Chinchet, LePage's former chief legal counsel. He and Cynthia Dill, a Cape Elizabeth attorney, say the justices' questions on whether legislative leaders properly extended the legislature's adjournment date appear to suggest that there could be a problem.
There was this discovery of the legislature failing to extend its adjournment date within the statutory level. So there's like this added fact now that gives some credence to the governor's argument.
Chief Justice Lee Sofley said the justices would place the governor's request for an opinion on an expedited schedule, a time frame that some lawyers said could produce a ruling as soon as next week. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Calling it a resolution that is overdue and could make a difference in Maine and across the country, Maine Senator Angus King says he's sponsoring legislation to allow asylum seekers to work in the U.S. sooner. Current federal law prohibits new immigrants from seeking employment until at least 6 months after they file applications for asylum. King's bill would reduce that wait to 30 days. Susan Sharon has details.
Fleeing persecution and violence in their home countries, asylum seekers often arrive in the U.S. with little more than the clothes on their backs. But as pointed out so often this past year, they're confronted with a huge obstacle. They can't work for at least 180 days. That means they have no choice but to turn to public assistance for help. And despite what has become a familiar refrain in Maine, King says asylum seekers are not illegal immigrants.
They are not illegal aliens. They are not illegal anything. They are here because that's the policy of the United States for something like 70 years, to bring people, to allow people to come into this country who are in distress.
But King acknowledges that the six-month wait for a work permit does put a strain on local governments. The solution, King says, is the best social program of all, a job, or at least the ability to look for work 30 days after filing an application for asylum. He sees his bill not only as a humanitarian obligation, but something needed for economic survival in Maine, where schools are facing declining enrollments and employers lack skilled workers.
We need workers. If we don't have additional people from around the country or from around the world, we are not going to be able to compete or sustain our economy.
It's an idea echoed by both the Androscoggin County and Portland Regional Chambers of Commerce, which support King's bill as something urgently needed.
I have people from all around the world in my office now on a weekly basis who bring enormous skills, all sorts of talent, and we can't put them to work. And that is absolutely wrong.
Chris Hall is with the chamber in Portland, where he says the unemployment rate is 4%.
And that's why this bill is so important, that we can take people and convert them into part of our economy. We need it, they need it, and putting the two together makes all the sense in the world.
One example is Philemon Dushimiri, a refugee from Burundi. Dushimiri is an attorney who previously worked in the judicial branch of the Burundi government. He says he was forced to flee political persecution and arrived in Maine in 2010 looking for a new life. But Dushimiri says the mandatory waiting period for a job prevented him from being able to provide for himself and for his family.
Once the waiting period expired, I was able to secure a job. If this bill was enacted, I would have been able to support myself and rely less on assistance from Portland.
Senator King previously introduced a similar provision as an amendment during the last immigration reform debate, but it failed to be voted on in the House. He says this bill will take work to pass, but he thinks some earlier concerns about immigrants cheating the system or coming to the U.S. simply to work have been addressed through better technology and other safeguards. In the end, King says, it's a risk that he's willing to take. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And finally today, a former shoe mill in Auburn is set to become a five-star medical tourism facility that caters to wealthy Chinese. The plan was announced today at a press conference where a Chinese investment company, Central Maine Medical Center, and city and state officials heralded what they call a unique opportunity. Patty White has more.
So, just what is a five-star medical tourism facility? In Auburn, it will be a 200-room recovery center that can house at least 5,000 guests a year. The investor behind the project is Miracle Enterprise, a group that has a number of healthcare initiatives in China, according to management representative Michelle Zhu. She says their target clients are wealthy Chinese individuals who, upon their arrival at the future five-star facility, will get a complete workup on their health.
So that will include physical examination or stem cell analysis or genetic analysis and testings. And after all that is done, we'll be able to analyze, you know, the health condition of the person and what kind of treatments he needs or he or she needs.
Guests could opt for elective treatments like anti-aging, or they could arrive with known medical conditions. And Central Maine Medical Center is a willing partner to provide care, says President Peter Chalk.
Very high rate of diabetes in China, which we're certainly very well situated to assist. We have three or four endocrinologists on our staff that do that as a specialty. Very high rates of cancer, and we have a full cancer program.
The medical tourism facility will serve as a recovery center where 80 employees will tend to Chinese guests or locals who choose to stay there. Michelle Xu says they're still working out pricing packages, but she's confident Auburn will be an attractive tourist destination because of what she describes as the clean air, water, and food. Plus, Acadia National Park is just a two-hour drive away.
You know, people are going to want to come here to enjoy the city and also, you know, receive some medical treatments at the same time. I think that would be a great vacation option for them as well.
The Chinese represent a big market.
Joe Harkins is a spokesperson for the Medical Tourism Association. He says a lot of cities and states are jumping on the medical tourism bandwagon.
Healthcare can be a business and, you know, two-pronged, where you want to provide health, and there's economic incentives involved with that, too.
But Dr. Gil Welch of the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice is leery of that notion.
Maybe it's good business. Is it good for healthcare in Maine? I'd say no.
What concerns Welch is the commercial attitude a medical tourism facility brings to healthcare, where the desire is to sell more product. He says American medicine already has a problem with medical overdiagnosis and treatment.
It's very hard to make people who are well better, but it isn't that hard to make them worse.
But Central Maine Medical Center President Peter Chalk sees the facility as a win-win that will help both Chinese tourists seeking medical care as well as the hospital.
Well, obviously, you know, one of the things that we have to do in a population like Maine that doesn't grow, we have a fixed number of citizens in this area, so this will bring new patients to our hospital.
Maine's Commissioner of Economic and Community Development, George Gervais, welcomes the medical tourism facility and says it could serve as an EB-5 regional center. EB-5 is the federal investment program that allows foreign investors to fast-track through the immigration process if they invest at least $500,000 into a project that creates at least 10 jobs.
It's an excellent example of when we welcome private investment and we show appreciation for that private investment, then it does come.
Work on converting the old shoe mill to the recovery center will begin immediately and is expected to be completed within 2 years. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
And at 13 minutes before 6, it's time to check the weather forecast with our meteorologist, Paul Cousins.
Thank goodness for small wonders. Slightly drier Canadian air has cleansed Maine, but not quite sufficient to quell the few showers across the county overnight. Moonlit skies for much of the state, mid-50s north, mid-60s south. Tomorrow, a weak upper air perturbation will traverse New England. Mostly cloudy over northern Maine with afternoon thunderstorms. Western Maine, some morning sunshine with afternoon thunder. For the southern half of the state, plenty of sunshine with only isolated thunderstorms late. Low 70s north, mid-80s south. Sunday, pleasant for many. Only along the northwestern border will sunshine be limited with a few showers. More sun than clouds for most. Mid-70s north, mid-80s south, cooler at the shore. Monday will be sultry. Variable sunshine with afternoon thunderstorms widespread. Tuesday, drier and still warm. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered for today. Thanks to Jennifer Mitchell, Keith Shordahl, Jay Field, and Andrew Catalina. I'm Nora Flaherty.